This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and John Lyons.
And welcome into the Diehards. I am John Lyons alongside the one, the only, Brendan Connolly. And Brendan, we had a whole show planned out, and then something monumental happened in the world of sports, and that was Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL, the greatest football player in the history of the NFL, after 23 seasons, decided to retire today. Brendan, I think this is a monumental day. I think it's a sad day for football that he's leaving, but what are your thoughts?
Well, you mentioned it. We had a whole text chain lined out with our entire agenda for the show, and then, of course, I wake up at 7:10 this morning, give or take. I'm like, oh, it's a little early. I think I'm going to go back to sleep. Wake up at 9 o'clock, and I see a million texts from my friends, a million updates on my phone. The GOAT has officially decided to call it quits. Officially, we think.
Yes, and I do think it is official this time. I think it's a tremendous career from start to finish. There's a lot of memories there, and we're going to get to all that. We do have a loaded show tonight. We're going to get to all those memories, but first, our producers John Belmer and Brian McDonald put together a little look back on Brady's career, which you're going to play for you right now.
I'll get to the point right away. I'm retiring for good.
Johnny Paxson will snap from the far hash mark, angle to the left for Adam Vinatieri, 48-yard field goal attempt, set to go, snap, ball down, kick up, kick is on the way, and it is good! It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri moves a 48-yard field goal, and the game is over, and the Patriots are Super Bowl champions! The Patriots are Super Bowl champions! The best team of the National
From the one-yard line, it's Rod Smart. The 20 runs out of room, and the Panthers run out of time. The New England Patriots claim their second Super Bowl championship in 3 years.
The Patriots to the line, they take the knee, and it's all over. The New England Patriots have won the Super Bowl for the third time in 4 years.
Thank you guys so much to every single one of you for supporting me. My family, my friends, my teammates, my competitors. I wouldn't change a thing.
Brady gets the snap, falls to his right knee. The bench is empty. And the New England Patriots have just ripped the heart out of the defending Super Bowl champion Seahawks as Tom Brady throws four touchdown passes, setting records along the way, and a fourth championship for the Brady-Belichick combination, the most successful in pro football history.
Brady breaks huddle at the 2 of Atlanta. Brady under center, Edelman in motion. Brady gets the snap, pitches out wide, gets a block, cuts inside. He digs, he turns, he dives. It is a touchdown! It is a touchdown! The Patriots have won Super Bowl 51 in the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. The New England Patriots have won their fifth Super Bowl, and Tom Brady stands alone in NFL history as the only quarterback to win five Super Bowl titles.
I'm going out on a limb and saying this is to win the Super Bowl. 41 yards, Cardona to Allen. Gostkowski. Six titles, nine appearances. Enjoy it, folks. You're never, ever going to see it again. Not in our lifetime.
Some breaking news, of course, coming out of Tampa Bay. We kind of knew this the last couple days, but Tom Brady officially a member of the Buccaneers heading forward into 2020.
Final snap of the ball game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, underdogs at home. For the first time in NFL history, hosting a Super Bowl on their home field. And Tom Brady just does his thing. How about that? His 10th Super Bowl, 7th ring. There it is. 0-0-0. Bucks win!
Thank you guys for allowing me to live my absolute dream. Love you all.
that's a look back at Tom Brady's illustrious career. And, Brendan, there's one quote in that that really stands out to me, and that is Ian Eagle's radio call of one of Brady's Super Bowl victories. He says, Tom Brady stands alone. And I think if you had to encapsulate Tom Brady's career, you would say greatest of all time, and you would say he stands alone. When it comes to his play, his accomplishments, his longevity, there's nobody really in sports, but especially in football, that you could compare him to.
Do you think it's safe to say he's the greatest athlete of all time?
I think he's definitely in that conversation, without a doubt. I don't know if I would go there yet, and I'm not saying I wouldn't. I'd really have to think about it. You think about people
There's categories, right?
Yeah.
You've got your biggest winners of all time, like Bill Russell won his 11 championships.
See, I would put Brady number one there, and I know Bill Russell's 11 is greater than Tom Brady's 7, but Bill Russell had fewer teams in his league. He plays a sport that it's a little easier to win from a health standpoint, and free agency.
And then
that's a huge thing that Bill Russell didn't have to deal with.
Exactly. And then other people will make the case, oh, what about Michael Jordan? Well, guess what? Brady won in a similar era and had an extra title to his name as well. So I think you can make the discussion. Then there's other athletes, individuals, I think you can really make a case for, like maybe Muhammad Ali, for instance, Pele in the soccer world, Kobe,
LeBron,
for instance, LeBron. Those are
Wayne Gretzky.
But again,
that's the conversation.
That's the conversation that we're having right now. Like, Wayne Gretzky's another good one. Like, where does Tom Brady fit in that hierarchy?
A lot of those guys we're mentioning, I put Tom Brady ahead of them.
I would put Jordan ahead of all the basketball players we listed.
And I'd put Brady ahead of Jordan.
Exactly.
And I'd put Brady ahead of Wayne Gretzky. Now, he might not have some of the individual season records that Gretzky has, but he did for a while. I mean, he set the 50-touchdown record, and yes, it was broken in subsequent years, but he was still throwing 40 to 45 touchdowns per year. But it's an interesting discussion because I would put him ahead of all those guys. And in the NFL, I mean, he stands alone.
Yeah, I mean, before his time, I would say Joe Montana was the standard bearer for the NFL. He is far and away the number one player in NFL history at this stage. And I'm going to miss it. This is a kid that I was introduced to as a 9-year-old. My dad was sitting on the couch watching Drew Bledsoe get drilled along the sidelines, and he thought the season was over right there like most of our parents did at that stage. Then comes in the greatest quarterback of all time, and we just didn't know it at the time.
And I mean, even a guy like Babe Ruth didn't have to deal with free agency. He got traded from one dynasty to another, or sold.
It was really like handed off. It was
It
was like handed off for some pennies to get I think it was a drama show going.
Yeah.
Something to that effect. Harry Frazee.
But that's the conversation. We're talking about Tom Brady with Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron and Bill Russell and Magic Johnson and Wayne Gretzky. Like, these are the guys he's with, and I think I'd take Brady overall. Again, because he plays the most violent sport. He dealt with free agency, and let's not forget, it's single elimination in the playoffs.
And there's
all these other sports.
Way more parity now.
You can lose multiple playoff games in all these other sports, and you're still in it. You have a bad 10 minutes in the NFL, and your season could be over. I mean, we saw that.
Over and over with the Patriots.
Yes, exactly. A bad 10 minutes, and your season could be over. We saw it this past weekend with the Chiefs and the Bengals. The Bengals had a chance to win in the final 2 minutes. They punted. They had one bad drive, and I know that's not the only reason they lost, but a bad couple minutes.
And a bad hit on the sidelines that sets Kansas City up in better field goal position, and that was it.
And their season is over. We're going to talk more about that later. But the point is, in basketball, in baseball, in hockey, you can lose 3 full games in a series and still advance. In football, you could have a bad 10 minutes and you're done. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons, which I think kind of flies under the radar for some reason, but to me, that's the biggest reason that Tom Brady is the greatest winner of all time.
And you don't have as much control either, because you have to be off the field for half the time as well. And just look at the Super Bowl where he played against Philly, where Nick Foles beat him. He put up 500 yards of offense himself in that game in four touchdowns? 3 or 4 touchdowns?
Yeah, he had 505 yards passing, which was a Super Bowl record. He was dominant in that game, and threw a touchdown pass to Rob Gronkowski to take the lead in the fourth quarter, 33-32. So, I mean, he was in position to win even that game when his defense played arguably the worst defensive Super Bowl game ever, top five. And I know there are some Super Bowls where teams scored 40 and 50, but considering that they were playing a backup quarterback and they were the defending champs, you could maybe argue that's the worst, or at least top five, worst defensive Super Bowl performances ever. And I want to spend some time, and we might get to this again later in the show, looking back at Brady's career. So look, we can debate, is he the best athlete of all time? I think he probably is, definitely the best winner. But look at his career. You mentioned he comes in for Drew Bledsoe in a year where, you know, if we look back on this, in 2000, the Patriots go 5-11. 2001, they start the year 0-2, which is including the last, you know, few minutes of that game. Brady came in against the Jets. Things are not looking good for the Patriots organization. I mean, they had never won a Super Bowl. They have their backup quarterback, sixth round pick in his second year. And from then on out, I mean, he goes 11-3 as a starter in the regular season, wins two playoff starts, and Drew Bledsoe did come in that AFC Championship game to help, and then has a phenomenal performance in that first Super Bowl. And I know his numbers weren't huge. He only had the one touchdown pass. I think he had less than 200 yards passing. But when they needed plays from him, the touchdown pass to David Patton, arguably one of the best throws of his career.
There are still quotes that I remember vividly, even as from my days as a nine-year-old. John Madden saying, oh, they should just play for overtime here.
Can't
trust Brady here. He's just a rookie. Or just it's his first year playing. We can't put him out there like this in the Super Bowl against the greatest show on turf. Nope, he led them right downfield for the win.
Yeah, and I think that at the time, that felt like this is a storybook season. Let's not forget 9-11 had happened that year and the Patriots in
red, white, and blue
were winning. That felt like a storybook season. The reality was it was the first chapter of a storybook Hall of Fame career. We're going to get to this more a little bit later. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We have John Ryan coming up next.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and John Lyons.
Welcome back into the Diehards. I'm John Lyons alongside Brendan Connolly, and we spent the first segment talking about the biggest news of the day, arguably the biggest news that we'll see all year, and that was Tom Brady officially retiring from the NFL. But right now, I want to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to be joined by John Ryan of the Predictive Playbook Sports Channel. And folks, if you want to make money, especially make money betting on sports, John Ryan is the guy you have to listen to. He is an expert. He always gives us great information and great picks. John, how are you tonight? Oh, we're waiting on John. We're getting John in a second. So we will have John in a moment. And Brendan, we are going to talk to John as we wait to get him. I want to kind of get to what my first point is. Massachusetts this week legalized sports gambling. It's the first time sports gambling has been legalized in Massachusetts. They join a litany of states that have sports gambling. And I think this is a huge move for the state. I think it's a big move for the sports community, because when you look at states, regions that are into sports, I mean, Massachusetts has to be at the top of that list.
Well, yes, and I was just looking at it from the benefits that could come from it. Over the past like decade or so, it's been a back-and-forth affair. People are arguing, is gambling bad for Massachusetts? Should we allow it into the community? Well, just look at some of the other markets that have had it and what it's done for them. Like, just the tax revenue that comes from it. That's just one basic side note to it. But overall, I'm excited to see how it goes. We saw how packed Encore was the other day. It was full already. Curious to see how things pan out.
Yeah, and I think that's something that you mentioned, the tax revenue. I mean, that's a great thing for the community at large. And I think you mentioned Encore. That's a huge piece of this whole thing. Like, they built that casino for sports betting. And I think it's great to see it kindly come to fruition. I'm told we now have John Ryan of the Predictive Playbook Sports Channel. John, how you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
Good. We were just talking about Massachusetts legalizing sports gambling, and I do want to get your take on that in a moment. But before I say anything else, the big news of the day, obviously, is Tom Brady retiring. And I know normally we have you on here for your wealth of betting and gambling knowledge. I did want to hear your take on Tom Brady and his career and maybe how he affected you as a sports fan, as a gambler, and just your overall thoughts on him.
Wow, you know, I've always followed the Patriots, and I know that it hasn't been always the most popular team to be cheering for, especially in certain situations. But you know, the whole idea of next man up, do your job, seventh and eighth and ninth round draft picks surrounding Tom Brady and him making them, you know, the optimal player that they could be, I think that signifies what his career was all about. I mean, the guy won seven Super Bowls, and whether somebody else overcomes that or not, I don't know. I don't think it's likely. Maybe in 200 years there will be somebody that does that. But I think that is the key takeaway from his career, that no matter what he had surrounding him, he managed to get to the big dance and won. So, you know, personally, I'm glad that he's retiring, because at age 45, and I'm a little bit older than that, I wouldn't want to get hit by a 350-pound lineman.
And yeah, I don't think any of us would.
Yeah, I mean, even at 25 years of age, you know, it hurt. So, you know, I think he's making the right decision. I do think, you know, Greg Olsen has done a great job for Fox. And I like how he presents the game, and he makes it easy to understand for the common person who's maybe just watching football for the first time, and they can go, oh, wow, I understand what he's saying. We don't know what Tom Brady's going to be like in the booth. And I hope that they keep Greg Olsen there. Maybe they'll do a threesome with Brady, him, and, the lead guy. Whose name escapes me right now, but I mean, that would be pretty cool, I think. But, you know, Greg Olsen right now, my humble opinion, is up there with John Madden. And he's making the game really fun to watch for everybody. So nothing against Brady in that regard, but we don't know what he's going to be like in the booth.
Yeah, and I think Olsen, you're right. I think he's done a terrific job this postseason. I think he's set up for a great broadcasting career. So that will be interesting to see how that kind of meshes with Brady coming on. And right before you came on the air, we were talking about the newest state to have live in-person sports betting, and that's Massachusetts. So, John, what is your take on Massachusetts now having this underway? What do you think it means for the state of Massachusetts and also for sports gambling in a larger sense?
Well, I believe it's the 37th state to ratify legalized gambling, and it's about time for Massachusetts. They had several opportunities to do it beforehand. And, the bottom line is that we need to make sure that each state is making it responsible, and they're providing the resources that if people get themselves in trouble gambling, that there's resources and organizations to go to get help for that. And I really can't emphasize that enough. I've been doing this 28 years, and believe me, I've seen some people where, you know, I walk into a sports book, you know, in Vegas, and you just know that person is like sweating it out with money they don't have to lose. And it's not a good thing to be involved with. So, you know, people in Massachusetts need to be aware that this is not an easy thing to do, and that it does require an immense amount of research, and you need to get a hold of somebody that you trust and admire, and somebody that's been doing it a long time. Not saying myself.
I would say you, John. I will say that for you.
You know, it's a dangerous thing. I mean, it's like legalizing alcohol back in the 1930s. So I think it's a very good thing. I think it also puts pressure on the neighboring states that have not ratified sports gambling to kind of get their act together, because all the states right now in the economic environment we're in, they need to raise tax revenues to pay for their bill. And this is a great way to do it, and I think it'll be very successful in the short term and the long run.
Well, John, let's look ahead to this upcoming Super Bowl. The line's been bouncing around like crazy to start. Right now, Philadelphia is the favorite at -1.5 points. How should fans handicap this game as the weeks progress?
Well, initially, you know, you got to lean towards the Philadelphia Eagles. I went out on a limb before the season started, and I said Jalen Hurts, MVP, 40-1. And I say that humbly, but I thought that was pretty good value. And everybody in Philly, I run this Twitter app that goes in the back end and identifies positive and negative sentiment. And the sentiment for the Eagles starting out this season with their fan base was the most negative in 10 years. So it got my attention. And I looked at their team and I thought, you know what? They have veteran leadership. They have Kelce under center. They have a quarterback that, despite what the radio stations say, can throw the long ball, and he's proved it this year. They have a great chance to at least get over the wins total, and maybe, you know, with a little bit of fortune, they can get to the championship game. Well, they're in the Super Bowl now. The problem with it now is that that sentiment has shifted to everybody loves the Eagles. Now, today, I did see with the Circa and Westgate, they did get an inflow of Kansas City money, so that is offsetting what I was concerned about, because I never like taking a Super Bowl bet when 70% of the public is on that team. And humbly stated, I've gone 18-5 in Super Bowls, and I will admit, I've had some lucky breaks with those games. You know, we had the Atlanta Falcons against the Patriots, and I was on the Patriots. We had Seattle, who forgot that they had Marshawn Lynch as a running back with third and less than a yard to go to win the game and chose to throw it again against the Patriots. So I've had some good fortune with that, and a lot of times my models will never pick up on that. I had the 10%er, which is my top-rated play, with the 49ers and the Eagles over the total. Well, it started out fairly decent until Purdy got hurt. And you can't, nobody in the world can say that they can predict, you know, injuries and then, oh, well, this guy's going to get hurt, so therefore it's going to play under, or this situation's going to happen, it's going to play over. These things happen in our professional lives, and sometimes you just got to suck it up and realize that, okay, well, this happened, I'm probably going to lose it.
John, we have about 30 seconds left. Can you give us just one or two prop bets for the Super Bowl you really like?
Yeah, I do like the ground game with the Eagles. I think they are going to have to do that to win the game. And, you know, regardless of what I was saying, hedging the side with the Eagles, my models are on the Eagles. And I do think it'll play over the total. So with that said, I think, you know, Miles Sanders is going to be a great over bet. And the reason I say that, guys, is that they have basically five running backs and a sixth one named Jalen Hurts, who's the quarterback. And they can bring these guys in and out and keep them fresh. But at the same time, Miles Sanders is going to be the guy. And I think he's going to go over any prop bet that you see, touchdowns, rushing yards, rushing attempts, whatever it is. And I would take him to score the first touchdown in the Super Bowl, too, just for pizza money.
All right. He is John Ryan of the Predictive Playbook Sports Channel. John, thanks for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. We will be right back to break down the AFC Championship game coming up next on the Diehards.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and John Lyons.
And welcome back in on the Diehards. Big thank you to John Ryan for joining us last segment. Provided some great insight when it came to prop betting and getting ready for the Super Bowl, as well as the legalization of sports gambling in Massachusetts. Brendan, though, I want to spend this segment taking a quick look back at the AFC Championship game, because we have the Chiefs and the Eagles in the Super Bowl, but how did they get there? The Chiefs beat the Bengals 23-20. On a field goal with just under 10 seconds to play to win the game, which came after a 5-yard Patrick Mahomes run and then a 15-yard unnecessary roughness penalty, which put Kansas City in field goal range with no timeouts, I might add. The Chiefs win 23-20. I thought it was an amazing performance by Mahomes on an injured ankle without Tyreek Hill obviously being there anymore. But let's start with the end of that game situation, because Chiefs face a 3rd-and-4 out of field goal range. And the first part is Mahomes with that run on the bad ankle was a hell of a play. And then the penalty puts them in relatively easy field goal range.
I mean, I think they were right on the fringe. Like, we all know Butker's had his real share of issues this year when it comes to hitting long field goals. But I think they were within his range just on the fringe. Still, though. Mahomes making plays left and right, gets along the sidelines, and if you're outside there, I mean, I get it. It's the heat of the moment. You're trying to make a play. You can't touch the quarterback there. You can't do it. And
yeah.
Oh my God, I feel bad for the guy because I saw what his teammates were doing in those videos on the way out of the field, but you can't touch the quarterback there, and it ultimately cost the team.
And here's the thing: that 3rd-and-4 play, The ball was snapped at the Cincinnati 47. So if they gain no yards, they're not in field goal range because we're talking over a 60-yard field goal at that point. But even if it's just the 5-yard run, so now the ball's on the Cincinnati 42.
No timeouts.
42,
you still have to figure out how you're going to get the 5 yards to.
We're talking about a 59-yard field goal at that point, which, so, I mean, you're probably not, you're not in range at 59 yards in KC. And then the 15-yard penalty makes it just under a 45-yard field goal, which, to your point with Butker, right in his range. So I think that penalty, that's the key point in the game, obviously. But I want to take a step back from that in that when we think of the Bengals and Chiefs, we don't always think of 23-20. And I know the Chiefs, Mahomes was limited in this game, but I think we need to talk about Chris Jones and that defensive line for Kansas City.
It was a pretty good game by them.
We saw they had 5 sacks along the defensive line. Chris Jones had 2. Frank Clark had a couple. We see, finally, those Bengals offensive line injuries catch up to them in a lot, due in large part to the Chiefs dominating up front.
Yeah, and it's not something we're accustomed to seeing, but give the Chiefs credit. I feel like they took a step forward defensively as the year went along, and you mentioned it. Clark was the big reason for it, I think.
Yeah, and we saw the Chiefs create a lot of pressure early. The Bengals had 0 yards of offense in the first quarter. How about? I mean, it's the reverse of what they did to Buffalo the week before.
Yeah, like where they just couldn't be stopped initially, and then they just went dead for a while. Yeah, it was crazy to see, but I feel like that's what the Bengals are. They are a team that kind of gets really streaky. When they do get hot, they get unstoppable. Like, you can't find a way to stop Chase. You can't stop those receivers. But then there are times where they just go into a lull, and I feel like that really did them in here.
Yeah, well, and it's see, I was concerned at first because for the Chiefs because they play awesome on defense in the first quarter, and then we get to the midway point of the second quarter, and or excuse me, the early part of the second quarter, and they're only up 6-0, and it's like they got to they got inside the 30 twice.
Not going to cut it against the Chiefs,
and right. I mean, you're up 6-0 after how well your defense is playing, and you're sitting there, you're like, well, Joe Burrow is only down 6-0. Like that's nothing for him. And then Cincinnati cuts it to 6-3. The Chiefs score a touchdown, and they go up 13-3. And then Joe Burrow throws an interception. You're thinking, all right, 13-3, just threw a pick. Chiefs have the ball. Bengals force the Chiefs to punt. Bengals get a field goal right before halftime. Next thing you know, early in the second half, they tie it. Boom, it's 13-13. So despite all that stuff and how great the Chiefs' defense played, the Bengals, led by Burrow, they found a way to climb themselves out of it.
Yeah, it was unbelievable to watch, and it really just became a real nail-biter as things went on down the stretch there. And I got to give Kansas City credit. A lot of people were doubting them this game. The line shifted a lot. Initially, Kansas City was the favorite.
Yeah.
Then Cincy took the favorite for a little bit, and it just kept bouncing back and forth. People were picking Cincy in this one. Mahomes just continues to be unstoppable.
Yeah, and so the first Chiefs touchdown was on 4th and 1. Their second touchdown, which to me was the best play of the game, and I think the best play of the playoffs, was on a 3rd and 10. Cincinnati 19-yard line, 3rd and 10. Mahomes is under pressure, moves in the pocket, throws a literal perfect pass to Marquez Valdez-Scantling that is a centimeter away from getting intercepted or knocked down, and instead is a touchdown to go up 20-13.
Yeah, I think that's another thing we have to give him credit for here is he's missing some of his best receivers. We already knew they traded away Tyreek Hill, but they lost a couple of receivers in this game.
Nicole Hartman goes out. You're so right, right? And Kadarius Toney looked great early, goes out with an injury.
Yep.
I mean, they're down to Valdez-Scantling here as their number two option.
And he still finds a way to throw touchdowns. It's unreal. Like, the guy can't walk, and he's still throwing touchdowns.
And then when it got to the point where they're up 20-13, and they had the ball, I thought, ooh, they might pull away. Not, I mean, it was never going to be a blowout, but I'm like, ooh, they might have a little cushion here. And then Mahomes had that bizarre fumble.
His worst, arguably his worst play of his career.
I know, yeah. The last drive, he had the best play of the playoffs, and then this one he had one of the worst plays. But Cincinnati gets it back, and you talk about a touchdown scoring drive. They tie it up 20-20. But on 4th and 6th at the KC 41, they go for it. The first play of the fourth quarter, and Ja'Marr Chase goes up and makes a play for 35 yards. I mean, what a throw. What more importantly, what a catch. Boom. All of a sudden, we're looking at a tie game. And to me, it was funny. Up until that point, for most of the second quarter and into third, I'm like, all right, I think the Chiefs. That play, I'm like, uh-oh. Because then the Bengals tie it. And then not only do the Bengals tie it, they force a Chiefs punt. And this is where I get into that Chiefs defense, because I think arguably this is the best defense Patrick Mahomes has played with, because the next two Bengals possessions, interception and then punt, it's a setup the game-winning field goal.
Yeah, you know what? Because I really feel like that's been Kansas City's Achilles heel in recent years, is their defense.
Yeah.
It has been that way for the past few years. They were winning on shootouts. Like, they were winning 45 to 35 games. It just felt like week in, week out, and that included the playoffs. This year we've seen a little bit of a trend going in the other direction, and they needed it because the offense has taken a turn downward as well, but they're still finding ways to win.
Last year's AFC Championship game, they were up 21-3, and they couldn't win. And I know part of that was Mahomes botched that goal line situation at the end of the second quarter. But still, you're up 21-3, defense couldn't hold. And to me, like, look, I know we talked about that Osai penalty on the Mahomes run. That's the number one play of the game.
It's the one everyone's going to remember, but obviously there are a million things that led up to that play, which put him in that position in the first place.
And I think the second biggest play right behind that, there's 44 seconds left in the fourth quarter, 3rd and 8. Chris Jones gets a sack of Joe Burrow, forces a punt. I mean, Cincinnati at that point, they're on their own 35. They have a couple timeouts. They get a couple of chunk plays in the middle of the field. All of a sudden, they're the ones going for the game-winning field goal. So I know that Osai penalty and Mahomes run is the top play, but this Chris Jones play, it's one of those plays that people will forget about, but that if he doesn't make that play, I don't think they win.
No, I don't believe so either. What did you think of the fallout after that for the Bengals and what happened afterward with Osai?
Yeah, I appreciated that his teammates stood there with him, because I think if you're going to be a teammate, you got to be there when you're going to the Super Bowl last year, but you also got to be there when something like this happens. And he's a good young player who made a stupid mistake.
And he was having a great game to that point, too.
Right. He made a stupid mistake, which obviously he regrets. And I think now he has an opportunity. Can he come back from it, or is this going to define him? Because if it defines him, he's not going to play long in the NFL. But if he comes back from it, this can be really a point where maybe we see the Bengals come together on their march towards finally winning a championship.
You know who I would give a call?
Who?
Maybe somebody who just happened to retire today, who's been through painful situations
back. What did you think, too, speaking of Bengals and after the game, all the talk, because Cincinnati did a lot of talking during the week, trashing the Buffalo Bills and even some weird DeMar Hamlin stuff, and then about the Chiefs and Burrowhead and all that.
Had the mayor come out saying they were going to beat him too.
And then the Chiefs after, especially Travis Kelce, they went a little nuts. I thought Mahomes, when he was like, oh, I don't have any cigars, but we'll be ready for the Super Bowl, that's cool. That is great trash talk. Kelce, like, I get it, bro. You're awesome.
You know why?
Like, lower the volume.
You know why Mahomes didn't have any cigars left?
Why?
Did you happen to see the viral video of his dad?
Yeah, he had them all there.
He had a cigar for sure.
Yeah, he had them all there. But, I mean, what did you think of all the Chiefs, like, clapping back at him after the game?
I mean, what'd you expect? You were talking smack all week.
Yeah.
The Chiefs, like, it's the Chiefs. They don't need any more motivation. They have the greatest quarterback in the league right now.
Yeah, and my philosophy on that, and like I said, look, Kelce, tone it down a little, dude. But if you're going to talk trash and run your mouth,
if you're going to be a bear, be a grizzly, and I think that's what Kelce is. Like,
and
he's that face of the team.
For the Bengals, if you're going to talk trash and run your mouth and you don't win, well, too damn bad for you. You got to be prepared to take it.
I'm just saying, if there was a guy I expected to talk trash, it was Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
After the game, but Cincy, you can't talk smack to your opponent.
You got to be more careful. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We're going to talk about the other conference championship game in the NFC coming up next.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and John Lyons.
Back here on the Diehards, I'm John Lyons alongside Brendan Conley. We just finished talking about the AFC Championship game, which sent the Kansas City Chiefs to the Super Bowl. On the NFC side, Brendan, we had what I thought was going to be a great game. Instead, we have a 31-7 Eagles win over the 49ers, but the reason they have a 31-7 win, well, there's two reasons. A, the Eagles are freaking awesome. But B, the Brock Purdy injury. I mean, that changed the game. It potentially changed the outcome of the playoffs.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Once I saw Purdy go down, I was like, oh, it's over. That was the team that had the chance to knock this Eagles squad off. And once they were gone, I was like, is there really somebody else that could step up and do it? I didn't really think so. And We've seen it pan out. Look, they've outscored their opposition in the postseason 69-14 so far. So they're coming in pretty hot.
Yeah, you could make the case the 49ers are the most or top two talent-wise teams in the NFL. I mean, they're phenomenal, but they were on their third quarterback already.
Josh Johnson, of all people, how long has he been in the league? Since, what, 2010, it feels like?
But I think what happened after spoke to the fact that San Francisco, with a healthy Purdy, could have won this game because he fumbles on their sixth offensive play. Sixth.
It was a close game at that point.
It was 7-0 Philly. By the way, Philly got that touchdown after a missed call on fourth down when that should have been ruled an incomplete pass to Devonta Smith, and it wasn't. But the point is, they're down 7-0 when he gets hurt midway through the first quarter, and we get to the mid-second quarter, Christian McCaffrey scores, and it's 7-7. Like, this is a game that's 7-7, and they have been without Purdy for a whole quarter. Philly goes down and scores to make it 14-7, and to me, this is the key play of the game, is with a minute and a half left, or just over a minute left, down 14-7, Josh Johnson, who was in for Brock Purdy, botches a snap, fumbles it, Philly recovers, short field, three plays later, touchdown, game over, 21-7. But my point on Purdy is, A, I don't think he doesn't fumble that ball. B, you probably score more than one first-half touchdown. So we could be looking at a situation where instead of going into half completely deflated down 21-7, they're going in 14-14, maybe even with a lead themselves. A totally different game.
Yeah, they certainly have the roster to do it. If Purdy's out there, I think they're in this game at half for sure. Maybe a one-possession game. They're trailing at that point. They wouldn't be down 28-zip at that stage, and they wouldn't have mailed it in.
Yeah, and even in the second half, San Francisco gave up 10 points. So, I know the final score is 31-7, and it doesn't look good. But to me, it's that swing at the end of the first half when it's tied 7-7, and you go from Philly being tied 7-7 to a minute and a half left. They go up 14-7. Then San Francisco fumbles two plays later, and then with 16 seconds left, they score again, Philly does, 21-7. Like, all of that within a few minutes span, that was the game. It's kind of what we talked about earlier with Tom Brady. You have a bad few minutes, you could be out. And look, I think once Purdy was out, San Francisco wasn't going to win this game anyway. But I really think you could make a case, if he's in this situation, it's a totally different game. And maybe even San Francisco has a chance late to win.
There were two teams I gave a chance of beating Philadelphia in the NFC going into this playoffs. One was the 49ers, and the other was the Cowboys. And once the Cowboys got smoked and eliminated, really it was up to San Fran at that stage. And nope, they were out of it.
And again, I think they could have. But and also, look, we got to give credit to Philadelphia. I thought they weren't great in this game offensively, but they were also playing against the best defense in the league. And they scored 31 points. They made the most of some of their opportunities. And, I mean, defensively, Hassan Reddick, he actually had the play that injured Brock Purdy, but he had two sacks, a tackle for loss, a forced fumble. This dude's on a three-year, $45 million deal. I mean, that's one of the biggest bargains in the NFL. This guy has an argument. He had 16 and a half sacks this year. This guy has an argument.
He's got
defensive player of the year.
He's got Judon numbers right now and making a lot less than Judon, I would say.
Yeah, and again, he's the best defensive player on a top three defense on a team that is going to the Super Bowl. So, again, Philly's numbers offensively, they don't look great. Jalen Hurts only had 121
yards in this game. He ran for a couple, however, had a big touchdown run in the third quarter that really sealed the victory. Honestly, I would say Philadelphia this year has been one of the most underrated number one seeds from end to end I've ever seen in any sport.
And I wonder if part of that is the injury late in the year to Jalen Hurts, because they start out, 13-1. He gets hurt, though, then they lose a couple.
But I felt like even going all the way back to the start of the regular season, people just weren't buying all in on Jalen Hurts, as far back as last year, too.
Well, and I think you go back to the playoff loss to the Buccaneers last year, Jalen Hurts looked terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a bad quarterback in the playoffs last year, and credit to him. He's made as big a jump forward this year as any other player in the NFL. I mean, phenomenal job by him. And look at everything around him. That defense is awesome. They have one of the best offensive lines in football. They draft Devonta Smith a couple years ago. They go out and get A.J. Brown last offseason. I mean, this is a team that at just about every position group has a blue chip player, and in some position groups more than one.
Do you think the real difference was the trade they made for A.J. Brown? That really feels like it's just completely opened up the entire offense.
So to me, I think that is the number one difference maker is I think Jalen Hurts has flat out played better. And this has been talked about already this week, but this is the first time since high school when he's been in the same offensive system with the same OC for back-to-back years.
That's crazy.
That makes a huge difference. But I think a close second is the A.J. Brown trade. I mean, this dude is awesome. And it's not just A.J. Brown. Like, when you add A.J. Brown to a team that has Miles Sanders and that has Devonta Smith and that has a great offensive line, I mean, it makes it so much easier to be a great, great offense.
Yeah, and I would like to see another local team make a move for a receiver of a similar capabilities this upcoming offseason, but we'll table that for later in the
show.
Yeah,
and we're going to talk later, too, like where San Francisco goes from here and where Cincinnati on the AFC side goes from here. And I think when you look forward at the Eagles, this is a team that they're set up not just to potentially win a Super Bowl in a week and a half from now.
For a couple, maybe 3 or 4 years.
To contend. I mean, Jalen Hurts is still young. A.J. Brown is young. Devonta Smith is young. Jason Kelce on the offensive line and Lane Johnson, those guys are a little bit older, but they have time to work in some replacements to those guys. They do have good young players on the line. Hassan Reddick, I mentioned him. He's still signed for 2 more years after this year. They have a really good secondary with Bradbury and Slay.
The weapons are all locked up for a while. If I'm Philly, I'm looking at addressing the line this offseason and at least stockpiling for the future.
And it seems like they have the right head coach. And, of course, that's easy to say when you're in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But Nick Sirianni, he was a guy that, remember his first press conference?
People did not like the guy. It was a little weird.
But to me, he's young enough, and I want to say innovative enough and connecting enough with players that he could be the head coach of this team for a long time. And it's not easy in Philly, but for as long, but we saw Andy Reid do it for 15 years.
It's true.
He could have a 15-year, especially if they win this game, but he is set up to have that type of run.
Yeah, so all they have to do right now is make sure their weapons stay in check and are
stay healthy.
Yeah, stay healthy for the most part. And then, obviously, you mentioned it, their linemen are starting to get up there in age. It's a solid line at the moment, but I would look at addressing it and trying to build for the future. Make sure you have those replacements ready.
Yeah, and when you look at this NFC champ, what's interesting to me about Philly, though, is they had the easiest schedule by DVOA. For those that don't know DVOA, it's a metric that puts in a bunch of different things with not just how good a team was last year, but how they're playing this year, free agency moves, offensive rank, defensive ranks, all that. Point is, if they win the Super Bowl, they would only be the fourth team ever to win the Super Bowl after having the easiest DVOA strength of schedule. So don't get me wrong. I think they're awesome. They have not been tested like the Chiefs have been tested. We're going to talk about that a little later. But I do wonder if getting through San Francisco's defense kind of gives them that confidence that, okay, we went through a big – and, yes, I know the Purdy thing, but they went through that defense.
I was going to say, it certainly looked at it like it based on what happened last week against the Giants when they put up 38 points and it was 28-0 at halftime.
Yeah, that's a challenge.
Like, I mean, this was a good Giants team. And I'm not a great Giants team, but a good Giants team that had turned it around under Brian Daboll and really had caught fire and was having its best season in quite a few years. And Philadelphia just made them look like a collegiate team in Division II. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't
even
close.
And you look at Philly's schedule this year. They beat Detroit in Week 1, but Detroit still stunk back then. I mean, they were just kind of getting their feet wet in Dan Campbell's second year. They won 38-35, but Philly was up 31-14 in that game. They did beat Jacksonville, another playoff team.
But that was before Jacksonville got good,
exactly,
obviously.
Exactly, again.
Same trend.
They did have a nice win against Minnesota, 24-7 in Week 2. They did have a nice win against Dallas, 26-17. But there's a lot of teams on the schedule, Indianapolis, Washington,
ugh,
Pittsburgh, Arizona,
gross,
like teams that
weren't
that good. Green Bay was not that good this year. Tennessee, not that good. Obviously, we mentioned the Giants. And you look at the games they lost. They lost to Washington, and then they lost to Dallas, New Orleans without Jalen Hurts. So I think getting through this 49ers test was a big thing for them, whether they realize it or not.
The key is, are they ready to go against Kansas City coming up in a week and a half?
And we'll get to that later. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We're already done with hour number one. Hour number two is coming right up next.